Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome back to the Infatuation Podcast. We are another on-location recording today. We are in the spot where it all started for my family. We are in Chinatown, SF Chinatown, Gamsan. We are at Portsmouth Square. We have a couple special guests with us today. First of all, we have Josh Chuck. He is the co-director, co-producer of Chinatown Rising. And Josh, have you eaten yet?
I have. I ate with my two small children, so I had some dino nuggets.
Yeah, sounds legit. Yeah, my mom and I just had some wonton and some lo mein over at Han's Wonton. Shout out to Han's Wonton House on Kearney. And yeah, so that leads us to our second guest is my mom. She's pretty shy, but you want to at least say hi?
Yes, hello everyone.
This is my mom. She grew up in Chinatown too, and I'm dragging her along on this little walk today. We're going to do a walk, and then we're going to do a little talk with both of the directors and producers. Josh's dad, Harry Chuck, is going to join us later. But we're going to do a little walk through Chinatown. Let's see, do you want to describe the scene? We're at Portsmouth Square. You want to describe the scene for me? A lot of energy, you said, down here.
There's a lot of energy, a lot of things going on here. We call this the living room of Chinatown because people are hanging out. People are spending time with friends and family and leisure time. And mostly because people don't always have their own living rooms
true,
at home.
True. Yeah, so you look around, I see people playing Chinese chess, a couple card players, regular old chess. There's a bunch of dudes, probably at least 50 guys, and they're kind of hiding in the shade today because it's so sunny down here.
Yeah,
they're kind of gathered around watching a couple of guys play chess. But yeah, if you're looking for a chess battle, get down here early because it fills up. It looks like it fills up pretty fast down here. So yeah, we're gonna start our walk here. And we'll cut into different locations. Josh is going to show us some of his family places. And then my mom will talk about my Gong Gong's restaurant when we get there on Grand Avenue. But yeah, we'll do a little walking and talking. So hang on, folks. We'll be back in a minute.
Love it. I listened to some episodes recently, like last week.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I listened to all the people I knew.
Yeah.
So like Caitlin.
And then Kyle.
And Kyle.
Uh-huh.
And then actually, no, Andrew Huang, you know that guy?
Oh, yeah,
he was on your, what's that show called?
That Singles Inferno.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How do you know Andrew?
From Cameron House.
Oh, is he?
He's here at Cameron House.
Yeah. Oh, wow, okay.
And then, I listened to the one we did the sports.
The Hall of Fame, our version of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was dope. That was that was good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think you touched on something, is that if you grow up in San Francisco and you're Chinese American, Asian American, you will know someone in common.
Man, like, I can't even imagine how many people you know.
No, I think you too. Well, I mean, you've been making the rounds for sure, but like, I think I mentioned this one time a long time ago that you went to high school with my wife. Vivian, I don't know if you remember her. She.
All right.
You got a memory?
Now I remember you told me that.
Uh-huh.
And then, Vivian was in my homeroom.
Okay.
At Lowell.
97-13 or what?
97-05.
97-05, all right.
And she came in, our homeroom already had this group of girls who was already friends from middle school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were all tight. And then I remember the first day at homeroom, they're like, oh, find a locker partner. You gotta share a locker. And everybody had friends already. And then of course they're like, okay, who doesn't have a partner? And I'm like, just me. Sad.
Yeah. Well, your great grandfather was a caretaker for one of these men's association buildings. So this was definitely old stomping grounds.
What alley are we in here?
Wentworth.
Oh, we're in Wentworth. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in the we're outside of the Lion's Den Lounge. Kimberly Sito.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So we're in Wentworth. What do you want to show us down here?
Which one is it? One of these. I think it's this one. Was where my grandfather on my dad's side worked as a manager of a gambling parlor. And my dad took me here a long time ago when I was a kid, and he showed me where the secret doorbell was underneath like one of these one of these things. But my grandfather came over from China, and he was real tight in the family associations, and he ended up managing a gambling parlor, and he ended up knowing a lot of people in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, my dad told me that he was real tight with a lot of the police officers.
Yeah, kind of had to be, right?
Yeah. And so he would give them envelopes, and they would send Christmas cards.
Yeah.
That's the story with my grandfather, which is pretty rare because I don't even think he'd barely speak English.
So this is like 1910s, 20s. Or is this Prohibition era, or is this?
Yeah, had to be around 1910s.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah, because they had a lot of, you know, they use the term speakeasies and stuff, but that's literally what they were, like little underground clubs and little forbidden little gambling houses, slightly illegal, but kind of skirting the law a little bit.
It's crazy to think about that these alleyways were like that.
Yeah. And so just describing the door, it's just a little door, 24 Wentworth. It's got nothing descriptive about it, no signage or anything. Yeah. Back in the day.
But who knows? Like maybe this thing, these things still exist. We just don't know.
We're not in the know. We need to.
Exactly.
Kimberly Cito probably knows. But we don't know. All right.
That's it.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, it's funny. So we'll talk about it later. But talking about the small world of China, Chinese Americans in San Francisco is like every other person in your film was Galileo graduate.
You know, exactly.
Every time I saw it, I was like, another gal grad, you know, because basically if you lived in Chinatown, except for my mom, who went to WASH for some reason.
You went to WASH?
Yeah.
Did you go there with my dad?
Yeah.
No, he's
5 years
younger.
Older.
You're younger than
me. Yeah, there's 5 years difference.
Ah. But you lived here?
Yeah.
Oh, what streets did you live on?
Leavenworth? Yeah.
And what?
Between Sacramento and California.
Sacramento, California. Okay.
And then you grew up down here, Josh, or are you?
Well, yeah, I grew up in, I grew up at Cameron House, actually, because my dad lived, we lived inside
the
building. And then my mom ended up living two blocks away on Washington Street over by the rec center.
Your mom, who could be a relative.
Yeah, that's right.
With two ends.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Not a whole lot of us.
But we weren't related.
Is that your last name?
No, my husband's surname.
Yeah.
But he grew up in, you know, South Dakota in Denver. So not probably not the same chick.
Not Chinatown boy.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
On days like this and I walk around Chinatown, I keep having to resist getting boba.
I know.
Like every block, I'm resisting it.
All right, so we're on Grant Ave now.
Yeah.
This is kind of the more touristy of the two streets, I think. If you think about Chinatown, it's basically two main streets. A little bit spillover into Powell and a little spillover into Kearny, but mostly these two streets, historically, are what you think of as Chinatown.
Yeah, you got Grant Avenue, which was made for tourists. But it's still fun to visit.
Yeah, super fun.
I bring my son down here. This is where he wants to walk around.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you get all the little stuff. Yeah. All little poppers and the little Chinese toys and stuff.
Yeah.
So if you're a tourist in Chinatown, you're probably going to walk on Grant. But this is the more empty of the two streets where the locals don't hang out all that much.
Yeah, Stockton Street has all the groceries, the delis, and
seafood. Yeah,
exactly.
But if you want a little Chinese dress, I'm looking at some slippers right now. Looking at some Chinese dresses.
When you came, some girls Chinese.
Yeah, dresses. We got the Chinese dress. One of these, they have this culture night at my daughter's middle school, and you're supposed to dress in your culture. So we came down here to get her a little chi pao, a little cheng song.
Nice. They probably grew out of it already.
Actually, one of them was just last year, so we have one that fits still. But yeah, for Chinese New Year's, we'd always get a little one down here.
Nice. So I'll just point it out from here that cream. the cream color building is my my grandfather and grandmother. They were both doctors. They became doctors in their early 20s.
Okay.
And they set up their first medical office in an apartment in that building. And
it's like traditional medicine, or was it more?
It was Western medicine. They both went to UC Berkeley.
Okay. Yeah.
And then they set up here because they wanted to be more accessible for residents who weren't used to going to big hospitals or, you know, speaking.
And they were bilingual.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and eventually my grandmother, she was an obstetrician. So she would work with like childbirth and all that. So she would work at the Chinese hospital and deliver babies. And I swear there's a couple generations of people that came from Chinatown.
I'm sure.
All come to me and tell me, hey, your grandmother gave birth to me, right? So that's pretty trippy to have that history.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really cool too to ask my mom recently about, you know, you ask your parents about basic questions about history, facts and things like that, but I started to ask my mom, like, what were my grandparents like?
Yeah.
What was their personality like?
Yeah.
What was their daily routine? And it turns out my grandma used to go to the same cafe every day in the morning, smoke cigarettes.
Oh my goodness.
And read the sports pages.
Oh my goodness.
You would never have known that if you didn't ask, you know.
Yeah, that tells me so much already, I think, about my grandma, who I didn't really know. I didn't know her, so.
This year, Paul Paul?
Yeah, my mom's name, yeah.
All right, so would it be Dr. Chin? What was her?
She went by, that's a good question. Because I don't know if she went by, I think she went by her maiden name, which was Tong.
Okay, Ellen Tong. If you were born in like the 50s, 60s?
I think it would be around there.
So, yeah, if you were delivered by Dr. Tong, Chinese Hospital, San Francisco, 1950s and 60s, send us an email. I'll get it to Joshua. We got to get a family tree of everyone your mom helped deliver.
That'd be a lot.
Yeah. That would be awesome. Yeah, pretty quiet down here. You want to walk one block up to Stockton?
Let's walk. This is where.
Oh, yeah, let's do the restaurant. Let's do the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, real quiet down here. I thought it'd be a little busier because of spring break.
I know.
You know what's funny, though, as a kid, and my mom can attest to this, I didn't like coming down here very much because. You know, the guys that are spitting, we used to call them the Hoktuis. Guys spitting, and it was just kind of foreign to us, and it smelled a little different. So we never liked coming down here as a kid, but now I kind of regret not knowing more about this area and the street. Did you like living down here?
I like living down here. You know, I'm fourth generation, and so I don't speak Chinese.
Right.
My parents never spoke at home.
Same. Yeah.
My grandparents were, I barely knew them, so I didn't need to, you know, learn Chinese to speak to them. So there is always a disconnect, even though I spent a lot of time down here.
Yeah.
I always felt like I wasn't quite
right.
Super local.
Yeah.
But I always love being around.
Like, yeah.
I actually like being in a place and growing up in a place where a lot of tourists come.
Hi. How are you?
Very good.
Should be proud.
Maggie, how's business? Business okay?
I'm not too proud.
Oh, no. Kind of quiet today.
No, it's good.
You're doing okay.
No, sure. 57 years. Well. Yeah. Always. You know, you just good days and bad days. You know, it can't always be good.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Yeah. Still alive.
We can hang in there.
You got a roof over your head. You got food on the table.
Yeah. Raise my three kids. You know. Didn't help me. That's what I don't want them around here.
You have them involved with your business?
Oh gosh, no. People don't even know I have kids. half of the neighbors said, you have three children. They said, where are they? I said, well, they'll never walk in here. That's why we're still talking to each other.
I guess that's how you keep the peace.
Yeah, no, they had their own professions. I raised them that way.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to force them because then they sort of rebel, you know. They say, I have some other interests. I don't want someone to walk all day.
That was good thinking.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, who are your customers? Is it more tourists or is it more locals?
Oh, no, all kinds. Not only tourists. You have to eat, too.
You know Josh?
Josh.
Josh Chuck's dad is Harry Chuck.
Harry
Cameron House.
Oh, the Reverend Harry Chuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
That's Josh's dad.
Oh, that's your dad. Yeah. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
So, guys, come down to 718 Grand Avenue to the Waukesha. We're doing a podcast. Is it okay I put you on the podcast? It's audio only.
I didn't say anything bad.
No, you sound great. You look great. Yeah. All right. Nice meeting you. Good day today, huh? Nice and sunny.
Yeah, it is really nice. Yeah.
Good to see you. Wow. Thank you. What's her name?
Tane.
Tane?
Yeah. It's like Jane with a T.
Okay. Tane. What's her last name?
Chan.
Tane Chan. All right. We just ran bumped into Tane Chan from the walk shop. It's always fun to talk to locals.
Like that.
Been here 50, business for 50 years, you said, or something?
More
than that, yeah. Oh, here's Far East Cafe, Mo. Here's Far East Cafe.
Yes.
Still one of your favorites down here?
It definitely is. Just because of the iconic dining rooms, the little private curtained dining rooms.
Yeah.
And the food is good.
Yeah? It's been in business for a long time, so you can't stay in business with bad food. What's your favorite place to eat down here, Josh?
Kind of depends what I want to eat.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. But
the real basic stuff, like a rice plate, I actually go to New Fortune on Stockton and Sacramento.
Okay.
It's like hole in the wall.
Yeah,
it's just a family owns that and cooks and everything else.
Yeah.
My secret spot to go to.
So don't listen to anybody. Close your ears for a second.
These are the best steam bows, in my opinion.
Okay.
It's a place called Blue Sky on Powell and Vallejo.
Really? Okay, that's kind of outskirts. It's a little
further
away.
It's on the edge, but the best steam bows.
Really?
They're like $1.20 each.
Okay.
So Powell and what's the cross street?
Vallejo.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Blue Sky, not.
The northern end.
They don't speak English there.
Oh, really? You get yelled at, though? That's how you know it's legit, when you get kind of yelled at.
You just point.
Yeah. It's good. It's a good spot.
All right, this good. All right, Old St. Mary's.
Oh, yeah, you get all the sounds. Man.
Get all the cable car sounds.
This is where I usually start, like, my tours.
Yeah.
And then we go make the round.
Yeah, so around California, there's a cable car that runs here. Did you used to take the cable car to school or anything?
No, we would walk.
I don't even know how much a cable car costs. It's like $10 now to rent.
It's a lot. It's at least $8 one way.
It's at least $8, yeah.
This is the Sing Fat building, and it was built right after the 1906 earthquake. And it's kind of iconic together with these two buildings with the pagodas on top.
Yeah.
They were like, my great-grandfather was named Tong Bong on my mom's side. And he was one of the merchants who, after 1906, devastated the area. The city wanted to move the Chinese community out of Chinatown.
Oh, wow.
Out into the southeast corner of the city.
Yeah.
So my great-grandfather and some other merchants got together and convinced the city that they would actually transform Chinatown into a tourist attraction.
Uh-huh.
So they hired a white architect to design a lot of the buildings and things around in what he would imagine to be an oriental fairyland.
Right.
That's why you got pagodas on top of buildings.
Yeah.
Lanterns, light posts, all that. So. It was an import-export shop, and it was pretty successful, I think. He started a branch in L.A. and also New York City.
Yeah.
And And
yeah, because when you think about it, Chinatown was just a place of business and residence. You know, it was there's nothing special about it.
Before
80 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Before the earthquake, it definitely did not look like this.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked like, you ever seen that show Warrior?
Right.
That's what it looked like.
It's like just utilitarian buildings.
Exactly.
Just to,
yeah, exactly.
Just to put a roof over your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing about Warrior, I love Warrior, but there's no hills in that set. Everything's flat. I was like, wait, that is not China. That's not China. It's South Africa. I didn't know it was South Africa.
It's too hard to film.
It's too hard to film on the hills. But yeah, real Chinatown would have been much, much hillier than what you see in Warrior. But I love that show, though. Shout out to Perry Young.
My dad said someone told him to watch that because of it has like history and all this stuff. And he said he watched the first episode.
And there's like boobies. It's like, oh no.
Exactly.
I mean, yes and yes, right? It is historical, but it's Cinemax days.
You got
that's,
to.
That's what my friend warned me to. He goes, you should watch the show, but I gotta warn you, it's produced by Cinemax, AKA Skinemax.
Skinemax, right?
All right, so we are at the corner. Well, not the corner, well, kind of the corner of Vinton and Grand Ave, and I'm looking at a shop called Hello San Francisco. But right above it, there's an old neon sign that says City of Hong Kong. But before that, or maybe two restaurants before that, was a restaurant called The Lamps of China, which was my Gong Gong's restaurant. Mom, you want to say anything about Lamps of China?
It started in the 1940s after the Depression, and after my father had spent a couple of years managing the Chinese exhibit over at the Treasure Island Fair.
Pan Pacific, yeah, Pan Pacific Festival. So it was my uncle, your brother Mel, used to tell me that that's where like City Hall would come and have lunch. You know, the mayor, the other supervisors would come down here to have lunch. Celebrities would come by and eat.
Yeah, my dad had several movie stars and, famous performers that would come.
Why do you think they chose this restaurant?
Well, some of them got word through my father's connection with the San Francisco Press Club. And because of that, there was some ties to old Hollywood, and the rest was history.
Yeah, my grandfather was a couple movies.
No, so,
like he spoke English pretty well, but he still looked really Chinese. So they put him in a Lucille Ball movie, Yours, Mine, and Ours. He was in The Ugly American with Marlon Brando. Yeah.
Wow.
So he had some connections, and evidently he had some connections down at City Hall too, so they would kind of come by. But it was kind of like, I guess, you wanted to try something exotic back then. You wanted to go, step out of your normal world and you come down to Chinatown and get something different.
Some of his civic-minded programs, which you probably don't even know about, was that he had a connection with the Presidio, and the officers often were invited as guests on Friday nights. Yeah. So there was free dinner for the servicemen from the time of World War II on through the Korean War period. So that was his one payback to the community.
Yeah.
Did you hang around and work here?
I hung out. I didn't
work. My aunt and my uncle.
I would sit there and peel, pea pods and wrap wonton. But my parents didn't let me serve tables. I don't know why.
No, but that's how you know the restaurant's legit, if you see a 9-year-old doing homework in the corner.
Exactly. Or maybe the accounting.
Yeah, cooking the books a little bit. But yeah, your Aunt Pat used to work there.
Yes.
And your mom, Florence, was the hostess.
And my sister came to help out as cashier.
Yeah.
But I wasn't very good at numbers, so my parents didn't trust me to touch the cash box.
So it lasted till 80-something, 82?
73.
Oh, 70, only 73. Okay, that's why I don't know anything about it. A little before my time. Well, not before my time, but I was too little to know anything about it, yeah. But,
was there a specialty?
They catered to the tourists.
Sure, yeah.
My father would go to New York to drum up business and set it up with tour companies to have the bus tour end here. And he would provide a dinner and background history of Chinatown.
The history of Chinatown. And he came here
1918.
So he was young. Actually, he went to Lowell High School, my grandfather.
The old Lowell.
Is that a Masonic?
Yeah.
Is that where it was?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just for a couple of years.
And then UC Berkeley. Yeah, so a lot of the Bay Area kids, Lowell and UC Berkeley, the pipeline was there. But yeah, all right, very cool. Well, it's not even open anymore, so it's not a restaurant. I don't know what it is.
It was up there in the alley.
You gotta go up
down
the stairs.
Yeah. Up those
stairs.
To that stairs.
Iron gate, I think.
It already looks exclusive.
Yeah, right.
You look at it that way. A dead end alley.
But yeah, it looks like it's not open for anything now. I wonder what it is. There's nothing.
It's all curtained.
It's probably vacant, yeah. There's a, I'll put a picture on the Instagram. There's a picture of, it was on a postcard, you know, one of those San Francisco Chinatown postcards, and it had a neon sign that said Lamps of China.
I was gonna say, because I have a ton of postcards of my great-grandfather's building, and a lot of them come right here.
Right. But all right, so we're making our way. We're kind of at the outskirts here. If you look another block down, you'll see the famous gate. What's that gate called? The Chinatown Gate?
Chinatown Gate.
The two lions, and you'll see the lanterns. This is famous. If you're coming from downtown, that's what you would see if you're coming to Chinatown.
So, yeah, I don't know if locals put much significance on the Chinatown Gate, do you?
Probably not.
Because it's so recent.
Yeah.
In the 70s?
Yes.
Yeah. So recent. recent for you, because it was built in your lifetime. But Josh and I are laughing because that's not exactly recent for us. All right, you hear us breathing hard because we're walking up a hill. A couple hundred feet elevation gain here. Oh, here's Willy Woo Woo Wong Playground. We mentioned Willy Woo Woo in our little athlete show.
That's right. That's
first
right.
Asian American to play at Madison Square Garden.
Did your dad tell you that when he was in college, he would go down to Palo Alto to peach farms, and he would work there for the summer?
I don't think he told me that.
That's a new one.
That's pretty crazy.
Actually, we haven't even talked about that. We were talking about how small world it is. So it turns out that Josh's dad, Harry, who helped produce this film, is also friends with my mom. So that's why that's how I got her to come down. I dragged her along saying that, Harry Chuck will be there. And so it's a chance to see Harry. You haven't seen him for a little while, huh?
Yeah. It's been, a little while.
Does walking these hills bring back memories, Mom?
No. It's painful walking.
Yeah, we're doing some steps, folks. So, did you used to walk them backwards? I think Auntie Pat says she used to walk backwards up these.
At some point, you gotta start.
You're thinking it's easy.
Work some other muscles.
Different muscle groups, yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, backwards walking is good for your knees.
And our second home address was directly uphill. Six blocks to Leavenworth.
Okay.
And so it was a wore a path down back and forth coming to Camera House for the program and going home at night.
And right across where I'm looking at, what's it called? Mei Ling Yun?
Yeah, Mei Ling Yun.
The part, we'll talk more about it, but it's definitely a huge part of Josh's film. So we should mention we are at the historic Cameron House building. Now, this building hasn't been here from the beginning, but the organization just celebrated 150 years of operations here in San Francisco. We'll ask your dad more about that. He worked here for, 40 years?
Almost 40, yeah.
So we're at the Donaldina Cameron House, established in 1874 as part of the Presbyterian mission. So we'll talk a lot more. I got to do a whole episode, I think, on Cameron House.
Maybe.
Because it's a lot.
You should call in all the people that you know from that have gone to Cameron House.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot, though.
It would be a lot, but yeah, it'd be good.
How come? Did you ever go to Cameron House?
I
never brought in because we lived way out, west of Twin Peaks. And
Monterey Boulevard.
We were lazy parents, not wanting to come down to Chinatown every weekend.
Chinatown is a lot.
I see.
All right, so we're going to go inside and do some recording with Harry, Joss's dad as well.
Cool.
All right, and we're back. We are now inside Cameron House, which I mentioned before on the doorstep, I'm not sure if we'll get it or not, is celebrating its 150th year of operations. Yeah, so that is something not very many San Francisco organizations can say that they've been here since 1874.
Right, almost as old as Galileo.
Almost, well, no, older, because Galileo's 1923. We just had our 100th.
Ah.
So not 150. Did you go? No, you went to Wash with my mom. Well, ahead of my mom, but you went to Wash. What were two Chinatown kids going to Wash for?
It was the newest school.
Oh.
And, only the bad kids went to Galileo.
The serious students.
No, actually.
They were invited.
Nice.
They were soccer players, baseball players who went to Gal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we should introduce you first. So the voice you're listening to, we added another person to our group here. We have Harry Chuck, longtime San Francisco resident. What generation are you?
Well, on my dad's side, I'm second.
Uh-huh.
On my mother's side, she was born here in 1900.
Yeah.
So I was sort of in between.
Yeah, yeah, so third and fourth, or second and third generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then your family goes
on
way.
On my mother's side, I'm third generation.
Yeah. Well, actually, so third generation born here.
Yeah.
But your grandma came here in the 1850s.
Grandpa.
Yeah, grandma and grandpa came here in the 1850s, yeah. So it depends on how you figure it, born here or raised here, you know, like, so we have some longtime San Franciscans in the room right now, which is pretty cool. You don't see that often. So we're at Cameron House. I think I want to do a whole episode on Cameron House someday because, you know, that's such a great organization, such a great history. And Harry worked here for, Reverend Harry, I should say, worked here for how long were you here?
let's see. Well, technically, 58 to 2000.
Oh man! So that's a good run.
I know.
If you work 4.5 decades somewhere, that's a good run.
Wouldn't recommend it.
So, funnily enough, you and my mom knew each other from youth group back in the day, and this was the place to be. Even in the 50s, this was the place to be, like for Friday nights and Saturdays.
Yeah, there weren't many options.
Yeah.
You know, for kids.
Yeah. So Cameron House actually started in the 1800s as a refuge, as a sanctuary for women, Chinese women who were brought here under various conditions and agreements. And Donaldina Cameron, she was young, right? She was in her 20s herself, I think.
Yeah, she was relatively young. She came here as a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
As many people did from other places, and then ended up staying here.
Yeah, and
spending their entire lives.
Yeah, so it was decades of just helping women who were in different situations. It was a safe place to get them out of this brothel life or different kinds of situations that they might have been in. So that's how Cameron House started. But then in the 1940s or so, it kind of shifted more towards community center and helping the youth and...
Yeah, and families. Mm-hmm. Towards 40s is when the Second World War began.
Uh-huh.
And you had the Chinese who were considered Chinese Americans, who were recruited into military service. And many of those who went to the Pacific, served in the Pacific, came back with war brides.
Mm-hmm.
So you had another generation of immigrants, but under different circumstances.
And still going strong. I have some students at Galileo who go to Cameron House, you know, so they still go to youth group. And summer day camp must be, if you added up the number of kids who've gone to Cameron House summer day camp, it's probably tens of thousands over the years.
Yeah, well, the statistic that really impresses me is that we've never lost a kid. They may have fallen asleep on the bus, went to the end of the line, then we might get a,
we got
a
him
phone
back.
Call.
We got him back, though.
We got a kid here. I think that kid belongs to you guys.
All right, so parents out there, you can rest assured, if you send your kids to Cameron House Day Camp, they will get them back eventually. They'll get them back. But actually, that's not, we got to do an episode on Cameron House, but that's not why we're here today. We're actually here to talk about a film called Chinatown Rising, which was co-produced by Harry and Josh and directed by Harry and Josh. And so this there's a story behind it, but we're gonna introduce it a little bit here first. So this is, if it's okay, I'm gonna do the IMDb description of it. You guys can add to it if you want to. But Chinatown Rising is a documentary film about the Asian American movement from the perspective of the young residents on the front lines of their historic neighborhood in transition. Through publicly challenging the conservative views of their elders, their demonstrations and protests of the 1960s through 1980s rattled the once quiet streets during the community's shift in power. But there's more story to it than that.
That's a challenge to try to
it is,
create yeah. a synopsis of a, yeah. a feature film, but that's what we got.
Yeah. Because it didn't start out as a 2020 film. It started out as Harry's project for school, right? Is that how we started?
Yeah, it was more of a glorified home movie and something for me to submit to for my degree uh-huh. in film arts. So, but then, you know, other things transpired. The world was changing around
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Civil rights movement uh-huh. was one. The immigration, what did they call that? Immigration?
The Immigration Nationality Act, okay. which changed the immigration policies drastically in 1965.
Yeah.
So that was happening.
Yeah. So those things coincided.
Mm-hmm.
That led to changing the, you know, the way things looked in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
You had younger immigrants. Who were, many of them were teenagers, but it was really tough on them to try and assimilate. If you were not English speaking, yeah. you were at a tremendous disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then housing in Chinatown was always mm-hmm. not what it needed to be.
Yeah.
Many people were crammed into single rooms or were shared facilities. You know, kitchen and bathroom facilities. And then with the influx of immigrants, well, that exacerbated the situation in housing.
Yeah. So you were a student, but you're also working here at the time.
Oh yeah, I was already working
okay,
here.
Okay, so he was a reverend with the Presbyterian Mission here.
Yeah, I was on the staff and I had a hobby, which was photography.
Mm-hmm.
But then I kind of moved up from still photography to film.
And I think, so this is 1960s?
Yeah, middle and towards the end of the 60s and then mm-hmm. into the 70s.
So you do this footage, you're just filming without really a story in mind, or do you have your camera with you at all times, or how did you get the footage?
Well, we lived in this building.
Okay, yeah.
And if there was some kind of commotion outside,
you just grabbed
it. Yeah, we just grabbed the camera, run out the door, and follow that. I think what happens with Chinatown is that people who live outside of Chinatown or who are not Chinese or Asian Americans, they see this as a foreign place,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's a, sometimes we call it a city within a city, but it's really, it's more than that. It's a culture within a culture.
That's true.
And obviously, everything's different. The speech, hearing people talk, of course, the food, and it was a safe place for people who were transitioning.
Mm.
But when the young people who had immigrated became frustrated, then we began to experience kind of antisocial behavior, some violence. I think at least 60 gang-related slayings took place during that period. But there were also positive changes. For example, for the first time, the police department actually began recruiting people, you know,
from the community.
From the community, so that you couldn't use the excuse that we all looked alike, right?
Okay, so you get this footage. I think it was like 10 hours, 20,000 feet of footage.
More or less.
Yeah. And it sits, you get it developed and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But it's in your basement for 40 years, or what happened to it?
Well, you know, the reason why why I hesitated about finishing the film was because of the way we used to edit film. You know, scissors and paste, right, kind of thing.
Literally cut and paste, yeah.
And you had a thing called cutting room floor. And after you cut the film, janitor comes in,
right,
and you never see it again.
Yeah.
So maybe it was providential that we waited so that the new technologies began to take over.
Yeah.
We digitized all the film that we had.
Yeah. And so how did you get involved, Josh? Did you find it in the basement and say, hey, what are these boxes?
Yeah, I was actually working full time here at Cameron House.
Okay.
And I remember he called me one day and said, I'm trying to clean out my garage. I think he was 80 years old at that time. And I went over and I saw he had all these cardboard boxes taking up this whole corner of the garage. And we looked inside and it was these old rusty film canisters.
But
when you opened them, the film looked
pristine.
Exactly. It was perfect. And hooked up the projector, looked at some of this stuff on the wall, and immediately was like, okay, we need to preserve this and digitize it before we try to handle it anymore. And so just seeing the images of my neighborhood, I could clearly tell it was my neighborhood, but the energy and the people and what was happening in those on those film reels, I had no idea about. And so I started asking my dad a lot of questions. We started talking to some of his friends. And these stories came out that I was kind of pissed off. Like, why don't I know this? How is that even possible? But there was also, these stories were inspiring me, saying, man, like, what a difference this would have made if I had known about all these stories.
As a kid,
And now that I do know, it's like something opened up for me, you know, I don't know if it was pride about, you know, being from here, but, or something.
Sense of duty, maybe even like this needs to get out there.
And just saying like, you know, I never learned this when I was young, but I think these stories are important. And, I want young students, especially Asian American students, to see, you know, that there were civil rights era leaders. That were loud and they were badasses and they were just leaders, you know? And they looked like us. And so we started to say, okay, let's put something together that we can show people. And we got a small team together. We got a producer, James Chan, who I knew also from growing up here at Cameron House. So he's like 4 years older than me. And he had just finished directing a film about Chinatown called Forever Chinatown. One of my best friends, Anson Ho, who grew up here. We grew up together at Cameron House. So we knew each other since second grade. He had done freelance film work down in LA since we all started. And so our team was four people for a while. We also had Kyle on as as a summer intern. And I feel bad about that whole experience because I didn't have the capacity to really
manage
it well for him. So it would be a good learning experience, but that's another thing. Okay. That's my public apology to Kyle.
Okay, shout out Kyle.
But we started and we did everything kind of at the same time. We did fundraising. We started filming interviews. Mm-hmm. We started going over the footage, trying to figure out what stories should be told in our film.
Yeah. What's cool about this film too, if you get a chance to see it, you guys should definitely see it. And I think we're going to talk about something in May that's happening with availability of this film. But it's kind of cool because it's Harry's footage from the 70s and 80s, or 60s, 70s and 80s. But it's mixed in with current interviews, well, relatively current interviews with people like friends that you knew, right? So we got George Wu, Warren Marr, Professor Lorene Chu, Professor Ling Chi Wong and his wife Linda, Police Chief Fred Lau, we got him on. We got a bunch of old timers, and I was telling Josh earlier, I think it's funny that most of them went to Galileo too.
So there you go.
I saw the SF State and Galileo, a lot of locals. But what's cool is you get a mixture of the old footage and the new footage, probably close to 50-50. It seemed like, you know, like maybe a little bit more current stuff, but you get all these stories, and this is something that, you know, it's close enough history where it's not in the books yet. You know, this stuff is not so old that you read about it in your textbook, but it's old enough for this generation to not know about it. You know, like they never heard about this stuff. And so you're not going to see this stuff on TV. You're not going to read about it in books. So your film is kind of one of the only things that I've ever seen from the 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s of San Francisco Chinatown. You know, we were talking about Warrior before. You see it from the 1800s. You might see some stuff more currently, you know, like Joy Luck Club in the 90s. But from that era, the 60s to 80s, you didn't see a lot of it. So your film kind of fills that gap in a little bit.
Yeah, when we first started the project, I did a lot of research to find out what was already out there. And it was very little.
Not much, yeah.
I couldn't find much. And I think one of the keys of, you know, telling a story is when it's your own story, how different that is, because it's your own community. And everyone we talked to pretty much and asked to interview for us was totally willing, because they knew us.
Yeah.
They especially knew my dad.
Yeah.
Okay. And, and trusted him to not kind of twist the story or to kind of not exploit anything, but to tell the community story. And so it was, people were really willing to interview, and that whole, you know, we had so many interviews. We did over 50 interviews of 30, you know, I think it was 35 people over 50 interviews, like 2 to 3 hours each.
Yeah.
Each of these interviews, we've got 4 or 5 production people in the room, right?
Yeah.
All of us. And
yeah.
So there's
no one's getting paid.
very little.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess what we ended up including in the film, because we had so many stories told, it was the only things we included were the people who told stories about something that they were there for.
Mm-hmm.
It was this first person narrative,
yeah,
right? That's so important. Because, yeah, you watch a film about, let's say, something in the 1800s, and obviously the only people that are going to tell you about that are someone who read about it in a book, and then they're just going to recite that and tell it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just a different feeling,
yeah,
you know? And so I think this was, the timing was perfect to have people tell about their lives, because if you try to make this film 10 years from now...
Yeah.
Even right now.
Yeah. People are getting older. Yeah.
It's really tough.
Yeah.
And so it just all worked out to be in this important piece of history that we can share.
Yeah.
Rarely do the Chinese in San Francisco organize themselves to express an opinion on public issues. But that has changed.
I knew Chinatown was different. I don't know if anyone else really understood.
Chinatown at that time did not think they have a problem. So I was the one who said, no, we have a problem.
We must bring self-determination to our own community.
America is all about fighting the system when it's not right.
My gut says, you just can't do this. This is not right.
I don't think really that anybody give a damn. That is the real issue.
I didn't think that my films had any lasting consequence that would not change anybody's life.
What would you say is the overall theme? Like it kind of is tied together in maybe activism. Is that kind of the theme that you kind of pulled out from it when you were doing it?
Yeah, I think it is social justice activism, and it's, for me, I think the theme is you don't have to know about activism to make a difference.
Yeah.
You don't have to have experience.
Yeah.
You just have to see something in your own community and care about that. And then you'll figure out what to do.
That is cool. You know? Yeah.
Because that's what all of the young people in the film, that's what they did. That's what they told us they did.
And they were young. They were like in their 20s. Yeah.
And they didn't know anything about social justice or anything like that.
There wasn't a thing called the civil rights movement because they were in it. You know, they were just part of it. It wasn't labeled or anything.
They were just
doing stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
We had a lot of conversations about what this film might look like and what to include and what not to. And then I think it was almost 2 years into the project that I found his thesis, his master's thesis, which was written out.
Yeah.
About his project. Basically, this is what I'm going to make a film about. And he laid it all out. And when I found that thing in a, you know, it was a box of papers that he had that he just gave to me. When I found that, actually, the finished product that we have almost mirrors what his ideas were. So by the time he got to the writing stage of presenting his master's thesis, he had a pretty good sense of what he wanted to show on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's pretty crazy that it did end up like that. I mean,
40 years later.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah. I mean, and it spans a whole bunch of different things, like the housing issue with Mei Lun Yun right across the street over there, that the battle you had to do just to get that. And I think you started to see the power of storytelling and the power of film even in real time back then, where you, like, do you want to describe the scene? I think it's one of the most famous scenes from your film is when you go to the housing commission and well, why don't you tell the story? So
we took a chance.
Yeah.
But we have some friends on the board of supervisors then, and they sort of kind of covered for us too. So you have these relationships that weren't there before, and when you come right down to it, that's what politics are.
It's all relationships.
It's not just about power.
It's not what you know.
It's who you know.
And
the type of relationship you have.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. It's a cool moment to see where you set a projector and you say the famous line now. And that's an iconic line, but you know, you're not willing to come to Chinatown. So we thought we'd bring Chinatown to you, and you just show these single resident occupancy rooms and you show 10 people in one room, you know, living together and just the conditions. Do you feel like it had a big effect? Did you sense the importance of it or the power that had on them?
Yeah, I was watching the old folks sitting behind us.
mm-hmm. watching for their expression. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they were
aghast. They said, yeah.
That's us. That's us. Uh-huh. That's where we live.
Those are the people. Know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, for the first time, uh-huh. It was out where mm-hmm. everyone could see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. And so there's a couple other moments in the film that are just really kind of cool that just show maybe the power of youth and energy and, you know, not necessarily lots and lots of know-how, but you just see young people.
Representation.
Yeah, yeah. Is that something, so now Josh is kind of taking the mantle of this and you're bringing it to school. I saw you at Galileo and I follow your Instagram. Everyone should follow at Chinatown Rising on Instagram. You can see Josh is at a different school every week. It seems like you guys got a grant from, where'd you get your grant from?
This year we got contributions from private donors.
Oh, okay.
So I actually went back to some of the people who had contributed to making the film. Mm-hmm. And there were, because the fundraising effort that we had to do to make the film was pretty immense. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. but there were people who had a good amount of resources when they heard about what we were doing. I think they really believed in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much they believed in us, but they believed in it and, you know, helped make the film happen. Mm-hmm. And so I asked them if, you know, I told them we were trying to get this impact work done. We were trying to get out there and do engagements with schools and especially public schools.
Yeah, yeah.
But the challenge with public schools, obviously, is funding. Mm-hmm. And even if it's just a little amount of money, it's so much work for the teachers to access even just a little bit of money that it's just it's a headache for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so this year we got some people to contribute funds. And so I was able to offer for free to public schools and community colleges and say, hey, I can either come in and do a presentation. We can do a screening. Mm-hmm. I can give your class a walking tour of Chinatown, mm-hmm. point out all the social justice sites, you know, offer all those things and offer them for free.
Yeah.
And it's been so far this year has been, I've been doing like, you know, four or five things a week.
Wow. Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I love working with young people.
Yeah.
It's been great for me personally to get a lot of the feedback and to watch the kids be so engaged and hear from the teachers mm-hmm. telling me my class doesn't usually pay attention that much.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's, so it feels really good. It feels like I'm just doing like a little bit, a little part of being, you know, sharing these important stories.
Yeah. And like we said before, it's something that people have never seen before, you know? Like, I know I've never seen it, even though my mom's family goes back 100 years, you know? I haven't seen that part of Chinatown or that view of Chinatown. All right, so what's the takeaway? What do you want kids to take away when they see this?
Sort of an awareness, sense of appreciation mm-hmm. for the sacrifices people have made.
Yeah.
And a certain amount of pride, because Chinatown is an affinity neighborhood.
Yeah.
People have a strong sense of belonging, which could easily be lost. I mean, it's a big leap from Anna May Wong to Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But someone has to bring those stories to the classroom.
So teachers and schools and libraries and communities can find you at ChinatownRising.com and can book a viewing. But then if they want to talk to you, they can get a hold of you through the website as well?
Through the website or through our social media. We have Instagram, Facebook. It's just at Chinatown Rising.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in May, I think you were saying that there's works into people being able to rent it?
Yeah, we've held off on streaming mm-hmm. for a few years now.
Yeah.
Everybody always asks us about that. And I think we've just been we've been so focused on the educational space,
right?
And you know, the whole institutional package and study guide we have, and trying to get that out there, that we just said we'll just get it out to the general public later on streaming. That's a whole new stage, I think. So we're planning on it sometime in May. We're planning on having it available for streaming rental, and that'll be exciting because
more eyes on it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we hear from people in these places. See, it's really hard for me to relate to these people, but they'll say, "I'm the only Asian person in my school."
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, that's really inspiring because if our film can show to that person and maybe some of their classmates, well, that kind of adds another dimension to how they see that Asian person at their school.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that's so that can be pretty life-changing, actually. And that I'm only saying this because that's what I've heard. People have told me that is that, you know, we've never seen Asians or Asian Americans in these type of leadership activist roles.
Yeah.
And then when people see that,
yeah,
they can see me as, you know, possibly being that person. Whereas before they didn't have that, you know? And so that's a pretty mind blowing for me to think about, just being from San Francisco. I have no idea what that's like. But I think the other takeaway is that we tend to focus on in the social justice activists who are rock stars, right? The people who are up in front, and they're the ones on TV, and maybe they're the loudest ones or the really charismatic ones. But you know, for most of us, that's not that person. That's not us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my hope is that when people watch this film, they'll take away that there's all different kind of roles that are equally important in the movement.
Yeah.
So, okay, you might not be comfortable being that person up in front yelling and screaming, but that doesn't mean that you can't make huge contributions. You know, if you just look around your community and see what you think is not right.
Well, that was a line in the film, right? Where your buddies are saying, or your contemporaries are saying, we were always told just to keep our head down, you know, don't cause trouble, don't get, you know, don't make waves, don't get noticed. And then in the 60s and 70s, it was a little bit of a change where it's like, okay, we need to get noticed, you know, we need to make some waves. So that still happens today. You know, there's still a lot of kids, I mean, Asian American kids who are just kind of not trying to make waves, trying to keep kind of lay low. So that's cool that your film can say there is other ways, you know, that you can do stuff. All right. Well, so we'll keep our eyes open for the streaming release, possibly in a month or two. And so teachers out there, get a hold of Josh. Especially if you're local, he'll come by. Free is still free now for everyone in the rest of the year?
For the rest of this school year, we're going to see how long the funding lasts.
Okay.
And until it's gone.
Yeah. So get them while you can. Slots are booking fast, or you said you're busy like 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah. It's getting harder to schedule them in.
Yeah.
We're only going through May for now.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Hope to do as much as we can, really.
Yeah. So cool. So everyone out there, get a hold of Josh or wait for this to come on. You should definitely watch this film. If you have any connections, there's probably people all over this country who have roots in Chinatown, SF Chinatown. You know, if you think about it, there's probably hundreds of thousands of people who have roots in the city here but have moved off. This would be such a great watch for them. But really loved your work. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us for a little bit, and for the tour, Josh. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Absolutely.
I'm hoping you bring me back for something else, like Singles Inferno or some sports content.
Got you. Yeah. No, 100%. No, I'm always looking for co-hosts. So I got your number now. I know how to find you. So everyone out there, I hope you enjoy listening to us. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, on Spotify or Apple. You can write us an email at infatuation@gmail.com, or you can DM us on our social media at Infatuation Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. So I think that's going to wrap it up for our little tour of Chinatown. We had a good time walking in Chinatown with my mom and Josh and catching up with Harry. So thank you all for helping out with this episode. And until we talk to you again, we hope that you're all happy, healthy, and safe out there. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.